Good morning, everyone. My name is Brenda Lindgren, and I'm an alcoholic. Good morning. I am not a morning person. I just want you to know that. And so I told the guys up here that they could help clean up my mess after I was finished. And Steve said, "It sounds like you're familiar with that statement." And I said, "Oh, my gosh, I am. I think I've been doing that all my life, asking other people to clean up my messes. So I want you guys to know I got this, okay? I'll clean up my own messes today." Because of the grace of a loving God that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous, the actions of the 12 steps, and sponsorship, I've been sober since July 11th of 1980. And that's for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very grateful for that. My home group is the Fox Hall Chapter 7 group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're actually meeting in Eden Prairie. Yay, Fox Hall! We are a very active group, and we read that portion in Working with Others in Chapter 7 at every one of our meetings. So I'm very familiar with that intensive work with other alcoholics. I'd also like to thank Eva, our international convention coordinator, for the loving invitation to be a participant this morning. It is always a privilege and an honor to participate in any AA function. And part of it is that I get to learn so much more when I do that, and I get to meet new people that I've never met before. So as it says, intensive work with other alcoholics, I'm kind of a person that if I don't know what something means, I don't always look it up, I make it up, okay? So in my brain, intensive means rigorous, vigorous, a lot of something, okay? Intensive. But I thought, you know, maybe my brain is telling me stuff that isn't true, so I should look it up just to make sure I'm on the right track. And the definition that I found was concentrated on a single area or subject or into a short term, very thorough or vigorous. So I have never, when I read that, I thought, I don't think I've ever consciously thought about intensive being concentrated on a single area or subject. But that's exactly what the first part of Chapter 7 is talking about, carrying this message to other alcoholics, not my message, which, you know, I sometimes want to have you know what my message is, but this message. And so I have to remember that I can't give away something that I haven't got. So I need to get work. I need to get to work on the, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my focus was solely on recovery, on the 12 steps. But by the time I got to the 12 step, it tells me that I have to carry this message to other alcoholics and that I can help when no one else can. So what that says to me is that I am uniquely qualified as a recovering alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous to share with someone else the message of hope that we have here, and that we can secure the trust of other alcoholics when a non-alcoholic cannot. We have walked in each other's shoes, and that's our singleness of purpose. As my sponsor says, to whom much is given, much is expected, and that God brought us together to help each other. And I want to give you an example of that this morning. I was sitting down by the elevators waiting for, I knew I wouldn't get through this without, waiting for one of the women I sponsored who was going to walk over here with me this morning. And I was sitting on the bench and I thought, I better do some more praying before I get over there. And I was sitting on the bench waiting and praying, and this woman came up to me and she said, "Can I give you little stickers to put on your badge?" She said, "You look very sad." And I said, well, actually, I was praying for some help. And you came along. And there she was. I mean, that was a pretty quick response to my prayer. I don't always get those, but that's part of when we talk about the intensive work. You know, I have a purpose today. I have found a purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to remember that Chapter 7 says, working with others, not on others. And so that means that the outcome is out of my hands. I am only responsible for the action. The outcome is out of my hands. And, you know, I think the person that gave us that was one of our co-founders, Bill Wilson's wife, Lois Wilson. Because Bill was working with a lot of drunks for many months, and none of them were staying sober. And he was very discouraged. And he shared that discouragement with Lois, and her statement was something like, well, they may not be staying sober, Bill, but you are. And that's the magic. That's the magic of helping someone else, is that I don't know what the outcome's going to be for them, but I'm still here, and I've been here over 34 years. So obviously, it must work. My first contact with AA was with a group of people, okay? I know intensive work, sometimes we think about one-on-one intensive work, like reading the book, going through the steps, sitting at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee, talking. But I look at it also as at a group level. That was my first contact, and I was reminded of that when I read in the Grapevine a daily quote that said, I love the new daily quote Grapevine book. It said, the group I joined saved my life. For an hour, I had a haven among those whose fear had once been as great as my own. I did not give my fear away. They took it. They eased it from my grasp with hugs and laughter, with shared experience. And that's how it really all began for me. My employer in July of 1980, I didn't show up for a few days for work. I kind of ran away on a spree. And I did not know, but he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he suspected that I might be a drunk too. And so I called him on July 11th of 1980. And he said, you know, I have a woman that you might want to talk to. And so I ended up going over to this woman's house on the following day, and she was having a little gathering, a little dinner party of people, and they were all abuzz. They were like, oh, look at this book, look at this book, and everybody was laughing and having a good time, and I thought, how can a book be so important? And what I didn't realize is that some of those people had just come back from the International Convention in New Orleans. And that was where the book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, was first brought out. And they had gotten a copy of that book, and they were sharing it with each other. And they just brought me into that, and they took me to my first meeting. And it was, I've been sober ever since. And I'm truly grateful for that. But what I found at my first meeting was hope. And I hope that that's what I do. You know, I believe that's why we have meetings, so that we can 12-step people, so that we can help each other, but 12-step collectively, 12-step other people. How am I doing on time?
You're at 9 minutes.
Okay. So at my first meeting, there was a guy there that was getting two years of sobriety. He was getting a birthday cake. His family was there. There was a lot of crying. There were a lot of tears, but a lot of hugs and a lot of laughter. And I thought, this is crazy. How do you stay sober for 2 years? But that's impossible. I know what these people do. They go drink during the week, and then they come here on Saturday night and tell everybody they're sober. I mean, I just could not fathom that you could be sober that long. But what I left that meeting with was the hope that I could do that too. So what does intensive work with other alcoholics look like for me? What it's like for me, it's everything that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's really it. It's everything that I do. Sponsorship, helping women live the 12 steps of recovery. Thank you to all of the women that I sponsor that are here this morning. I love you.
Thanks.
And also having a sponsor. And what that does is that bookends me. That keeps me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I can be of help to someone else, but also so that I don't fall off, so that I don't fall out into the weeds. Because sometimes I can get in the weeds, even in a day, I can get in the weeds. And I'm surrounded by these people that say, hey, Brenda, we're over here. Come back over here. So that's part of working with others. When I'm helping someone else, I'm at my very best because I'm thinking of you and not me. And sometimes me is all I think about, really. So I would not be sober if it wasn't for sponsorship. Taking 12-step commitments outside of my group. Saying yes to an AA request. I had some really great mentors, great leaders when I got sober. They suggested that I say yes to an AA request if I could do so. And that has held me in good stead. I try to say yes whenever I can. So bringing meetings to detox, to treatment, answering phones, 12-step calls, rides to meetings. I mean, all those things are what helped me stay in the meeting. Being willing to speak at workshops, like, oh, I don't know anything about that topic. Well, then maybe I better do some research and learn more about that topic. That's how I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Involvement in general service. I've been involved in the district, in the area, GSR. I love general service. It may not be the front lines of AA, but it helps keep our 12-step work possible. So what are the, where am I at? I have 12 minutes left? I have 8 minutes left. Okay. Hi, my name's Brenda, and I'm an alcoholic. And then the other thing is attending meetings and helping. You know, my sponsor says that meeting makers make it, and I know there's more to AA than meetings, but you know what? I can't say that I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous unless I go to meetings, because that's where the miracle happens. That's where I come in contact with all of you. And new alcoholics. And, you know, sometimes I think, well, where are all the new alcoholics? Well, I can't sit around and wait for them to come to me. I have to go to them. That's why it's important to go talk at detox and treatment and any other correction facilities, jails, prisons. So, I want to talk just a little bit about the benefits of what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous in getting out of myself and trying to think of someone else and working with others. And one of them, one of the most important, is acting better than I feel. Trying to be a good example. And believe me, sometimes that's not easy to do. It's not easy to be an example when I don't want to be. Because sometimes I just want to break out and bad. You know, I want my way. Or it's not going my way as I had planned it. And what the wonderful thing about having a lot of women here this weekend is that I get the opportunity to act better than I feel sometimes. Making commitments and keeping them. Being where I say I'm going to be and doing what I say I'm going to do when I say it. And that's a big one. Because when I was drinking, I said yes to a lot of things. And when I said yes, I really intended to be there. I really did. But then as it got closer and my fear started setting in, I couldn't go. And if I did go, I'd have to have a few drinks before I could go. And then sometimes I overshot the mark, and then I was in trouble, and then you got to clean up the mess, and, you know. And then, of course, I was always looking for someone else to clean up the mess for me. So making commitments and keeping them. Taking responsibility for my own recovery. Responsibility for my actions. You know, that's what you've taught me, is how can I be an example if I'm not taking responsibility for what I'm doing? Pursuing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. things that I didn't think that I was capable of. But I didn't think I was capable of being honest. I didn't think that I was capable of having some genuine humility. What is that? What is that genuine humility? Integrity. Courage. Courage to just walk through the fear. You know, trusting that you guys have got my back. And you do. You do have my back. I want to tell you a quick story. When I was first sober, a lot of the people went out for fellowship after the meeting for coffee, and I've told this story a lot. But it's one that has been so important for my recovery, in my early recovery. And they would always ask me, would you like to go to coffee with us, Brenda? Would you like to join us? And I'd say, no, I don't want to go to coffee. I might have to talk. I might have to say something. You know, my fear of what will people think? I might say something that, then they would really know what I'm like. So I said no for a long time. And finally, one night, I was feeling pretty good. You know, I'd been sober for a little bit. I was feeling pretty comfortable, and I accidentally said yes. So now I'm committed. I got to go. So I went to coffee, and we're all sitting in this around this table, and they're talking and laughing. I love laughter. It's so healing. And they were laughing, and they were having a good time, and I got into it, and I started laughing and having a good time, and then I said something. And I don't even remember today what I said, okay? But I was horrified. It was like, oh my gosh. Oh my God. And I thought they were all sitting there judging me, right? They weren't. They went on talking, but I think it's about me. And I, oh my gosh. So I'm driving home and I'm thinking, why did I say that? That was so stupid. I can't go to coffee again. I just won't go ever again. So I'm home and getting ready for bed and brushing my teeth. Now I'm maybe 3-4 months sober. Brushing my teeth. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I probably should not go back to that group. I don't think I can go back to that group. Okay, I won't go back to that group. I'll just find another group. Now, I've got a sponsor. I've got friends there. But I'm not going. Okay, so I'm in bed, and you know the committee. They're talking to each other, and it was like, you know, maybe I've overreacted. Maybe I'm really not an alcoholic. You know, maybe it was just kind of a phase I was going through, and so now I'm out of AA, you know, in a matter of a half an hour because of something I said at coffee. So my sponsor had told me that I could call her anytime, day or night, and that I should particularly call her before I pick up that first drink, okay? So I thought, I wonder if she really means that. I wonder if she'll really answer the phone. Now it's like maybe 1 a.m., 2 a.m., I'm going to give this a try. So I call her. She answers. And I give her this long spiel that I just gave you. Thank you. And it got very silent on the phone. And she said to me, Brenda, do you think that everybody is home right now losing sleep over what you said at coffee? I had a moment of clarity. I had a moment of genuine humility where I realized that it was not all about me. That's what you've given me. That's genuine humility. And I try to seek that more and more the longer I'm sober, because it balances out my ego and my self-centeredness. The other thing is a genuine enthusiasm for life and trying to help others, comfortable in my own skin. I have found that here. Becoming a friend among friends, accepting life on life's terms, looking people in the eye and genuinely caring. And not worried about what I'm going to say after they're done talking. Yeah, those are big things. I want to close. I'm running out of time, and I want to close with something that I found. I ripped it out of the book, out of that Grapevine Daily Quote book. And it's Bill Wilson wrote this in June of 1965, and I think it really says it all. I knew I needed the alcoholic as much as he needed me. And this mutual give and take is at the very heart of all AA's 12-step work today. This was how to carry the message. The final missing link was located right there in my first talk with Dr. Bob. Thank you all for being here this morning.
Well done. Thank you, Brenda. That was great. Let's give her another round of applause. So, Brenda. Okay, so in my concern with these bright lights and the sound, I forgot to say where I was from. I told you the most important thing, that I'm Linda and I'm an alcoholic. But I come from Area 29, which is Maryland. Yay, Area 29. My home group is Saturday Morning Big Book, which meets just outside of Annapolis, Maryland. My sobriety date is November 12, 2000. And, you know, much like Brenda, I'm so grateful for good sponsorship. And she gave a great talk on intensive work with alcoholics. And if I have one failing in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not trying to work on, but trying to work too hard at with other alcoholics. And I'm so grateful that I pointed that out to my sponsor in the beginning, and she pointed me to page 96. It's all in the book. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic, who'd have thought it, and try again. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man or a woman who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. And I got to say that there are no accidents in God's world that this was the topic for me, and you'll hear when you hear the thread, the rest of the speakers. But this past year, God has brought so many people to me in sponsorship. And if you were going to give me $1 million right now, I couldn't tell you how many people had asked me to sponsor them and had started working, but had either fallen by the wayside or they got well. And I'm just so grateful that I haven't gotten well. So now our second speaker, it's very interesting, but the topic is Chapter 7, and we have two speakers on the panel that are both from Fox Hall Chapter 7 group. So our second speaker is Kurt Kay from Hopkins, Minnesota, and his home group is also Fox Hall Chapter 7. Kurt.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name's Kurt Klotz. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 22nd, 1993. Very grateful for that. My home group is Fox Hall Chapter 7 in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And I think it's the fact that I came up in AA in Montana that you'll see that I'm listed in the program as being from Montana. And as I tell my story, you'll know that that's probably a fitting thing to be listed as, because that's where I grew up in AA. And it's where I actually learned what it meant to work with other alcoholics, and really gave me the ground that I stand on today in the way that I go about living AA for my life right now. I want to talk, before I start talking, I want to thank a couple of people. I want to thank Eva as well for the invitation to be a part of the International. It's fantastic to be here. I also want to thank my Montana friends. I think it was maybe Carol or Andrew or one of those folks out there who put my name forward, and it's really a privilege to be a part of anything in AA. I'm really feel privileged to be here. I want to thank folks that I know out there from Minnesota and from Montana. And it's fun to see the folks who are in my life now and some of the folks who were in my life when I was first growing up in AA, all in one place. So just a little bit to qualify. So I've been in many different types of an alcoholic. Before I got to AA, I mean, I started out as like the hoodlum wannabe type as a 10-year-old in a small town in Iowa, and you know, drinking whatever we could get our hands on. It was usually about $1.29 a bottle, Falstaff and the glass jar or glass jugs and Annie Green Springs and stuff like that. And I think my favorite pickup line at that point was, you know, "Hey baby, you want to go down to my fort?" And always had a cool place down by the creek. Bring somebody by. As I got in my high school years, I had a little family intervention that it was in between there, and I ended up a sneaky alcoholic in high school. I was a straight-A student by day, and worked at a great restaurant at night and had a good supplier there, and we did a lot of drinking together. I think my favorite pickup line at that point became, "Hey, baby, you want to go back to your parents' basement?" just sort of changing my tactics. I went off to college, and there I sort of became a feminist womanizer. I studied women's studies, religion, and all kinds of things that would make you think I was a good guy. And then when I drank, I behaved like we do. And so I think my favorite pickup line there was, you know, "Hey, baby, I think I really am the kinder, gentler guy you've been looking for." So had all of those things going for me. And after college, I went on and lived a life, I think, as a granola hippie out in Seattle. And, you know, drank a lot of microbrewed beer and organic wines, and would love to go in and, you know, ask at the wine cellar about what the latest and greatest wine was, and would love to sit in microbrew pubs and talk about, you know, if that was an oaty undertaste in that beer, if there was something going on, what was that about that beer? What did they, you know, get real sophisticated about my drinking? And I think my pickup line at that point was, you know, "Hey, baby, you want to go back to my group house?" And because we were all sort of living the communal life there. And the thing I know about my drinking, and you may have experienced this too, it doesn't matter how much you paid for it, what color it was coming out of the bottle, it all tastes about the same when you're puking it up. So
yes. It's
hard to be sophisticated as a drunk. So I think the thing that got me into AA was really my worst character defect. That womanizing thing was the greatest obsession after alcohol. And it actually worked to my favor, because I ended up chasing a woman into AA. It's a woman I'd been obsessed with for years. She and I had been doing the dance of death and, in and out of relationship and all kinds of relationships interspersed in between. And I got obsessed with her again at one point. But the difference this time was that she had actually gotten sober. So she was now in a sober living facility in Montana. I was living in Seattle at the time, and I chased her out there. I thought it would be a good idea if I checked myself into treatment, and I checked myself into the same sober living facility. I've got plans, and I can tell you I wasn't there to work on my sobriety. I had another goal in mind, but it's good to be tricked sometimes, because about the time I got to that sober living facility, that facility was taking lots of folks from that living place into Helena, Montana, where there was a big book study going on. And when I got to that big book study, I was probably about 9 months sober, crazier than I'd ever been because I hadn't worked a step to save me. Totally obsessed with that woman, not having any idea what alcoholism was all about. But when I got to that meeting, it turned out that it was a good, active meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, centered in the big book, centered in the steps, centered in working with others. And they just scooped me up and knew exactly what to do with an untreated alcoholic. So they got me busy right away. And before I knew it, I actually had a sponsor, didn't know what they really were or what they did. It's probably best I didn't know that when I went into it. So, and he just started taking me through the book, getting me to meetings, meeting with him once a week. It turns out that the kind of AA I needed was the whole package AA. And you already heard Brenda talk about that, where it's not just working the steps, it's not just going to meetings. It's not just being a service in the general service structure. It's not just taking meetings into facilities. It's not just having fellowship with everybody. It's all those things together. And I didn't know that's what I'd found. I didn't go looking for it, but that's where I landed. And I'm really grateful today that that's what I found myself in the middle of. Because my sponsor took me through the book, and I found out I was alcoholic, and I got to know what I was and what I needed to do. And that convinced me. I surrendered, I guess, about 9 months or a year into AA. I didn't surrender at the beginning. I surrendered after that AA started coming at me. And, taking the steps was a part of it, but the part that we're talking about today, the intensive work with alcoholics, started right away. I just got started. It just took me along to all the stuff they were doing. And I can tell you that my first exposure to working with other alcoholics was were institutional meetings. Our home group was very active. We went off to the state treatment center. We went off to the state mental health hospital. We went off to the prisons and the jails and the pre-releases. And I just got hooked up and started going to all those meetings. I think one of the most powerful experiences I had in AA was that I went along with my sponsor to a conference of Alcoholics Anonymous that happened inside the Montana State Prison. There was a group, an active group of AA members inside the prison called the Freedom Group. And those guys had gotten permission from the warden to put on an AA conference inside the walls. And so I went in as a naive, you know, probably about 2 years sober kid, really, at that time, thinking, okay, we're going in to save all those guys in the prison. So one thing, I was terribly afraid. Don't believe everything you hear in the movies about what happens in prison, all right? So don't start there. But I went in terribly afraid, didn't know what was going on. We went into that meeting, and the tables were turned. I didn't go in and 12-step anybody. What I found was an active group of AA inside the prison, and they did the 12-step work to me. Whew. Those guys were so fired up about AA and so much on fire to help all of us who came in, and also, of course, so appreciative that we did, that was a transformational moment in my AA life. And I went to that prison once a month on a Saturday morning for the next 15 years to carry the message in, because that deal changed what it meant for me to be active in AA. All right. So. I can also tell you, though, that it's good when you're new if you do a lot of meetings and take meetings into where people are captive, all right? Because my message needed some work, needed a little refining. At least these guys weren't going anywhere, so I had an audience. So it was good. I went, I took meetings at pre-release. We had a felony DUI program. I took meetings in there. But I just started going in, and I went into those, year after year. And I sponsored a lot of guys in there, and I sponsored a lot of guys who got to come out of there and stay sober and be active members of AA when they came out. And I'm still in touch with some of those guys today, even though I've moved to Minnesota. But that whole process really started to show me what AA was about. I mean, I need the whole package deal. But the part that's kept me around in AA for now over 21 years is not going to meetings. I mean, no offense. I'm glad you're all here, though I'm wondering where the other 8,940 people are that fill this place. But, that's all right. We were talking about ego deflation earlier, right? So I was all excited about, oh, my God, I'm speaking in front of 9,000 people. So, not quite. But anyway, so, getting used to talk to guys, getting used to carrying the message, but also getting fired up that it's not just, I know what I was saying. It's not just about going to meetings. Because meetings in my book would never carry it if I were just going to hear you tell your stories. I love your stories. I love hearing people talk about the transformation that's happened in their life. But if you've heard those for about 20 years, it sort of gets like, okay, we're sort of used to that. Yeah, we know. It's, you work a few steps, you get a great life, everything comes back to you, give it away, fabulous, great. But the piece that's actually kept my interest is working one-on-one with other alcoholics. Because there's something that happens there where I'm talking to another guy who I've helped a guy, I've listened to his fifth step, and you just think, oh, he'll never make it. Oh, my God. Sort of, makes me feel better about myself already, just here. So I get to talk to these guys, hear their fifth steps, and then I get to watch what happens in AA, right? Because we all come here with real problems. I mean, serious problems. And then we've all had them. I mean, the tragedies we've created in our personal lives and relationships. I was unemployed of course, that was sort of self-inflicted, but unemployed when I got here, chasing a crazy woman, fighting with my family. I hadn't talked to my dad for 3 years. We have those sorts of things, terribly in debt, never could hold a job. So those are just my list of problems when I got here. I've heard a lot worse than that in the guys that I've sponsored. So we come here with real problems. But the thing that's cool about AA is that after you're here for a while and you start working the steps and being active in AA, it's like the quality of our problems elevates. So pretty soon guys who've been sober for a while start coming to me with different kinds of problems, Now they're deciding, which job should I take? Should I ask her out? I've got a family commitment and an AA commitment. How do I work that out? These are high-class problems that start to happen when people are active in AA. I like that. Those are fun to hear. But really, the sort of pinnacle of problems in AA I get to hear as a sponsor is when a guy calls me and says, I got a guy, and he's got this thing going on, and I don't know what to do. How can we help him? So that's when I know a guy in AA has made it. I know he's going to be around for a while because now he's got other people's problems, all right? And once you get those, man, everything seems good, yeah? All right. And I tell you, those guys are a lot more fun to sponsor, too, because it's like, you know, after so many times of hearing, yeah, other than feeling better about myself, which I always do, you know, you really just hope they'll get a different quality of problem. So, but I also, you know, this whole idea of watching other people's lives get transformed, and the piece that's so interesting about that is you get to see all the challenges that people overcome. You get to see all the transformations in their life. People get to go back to school and get degrees and go on to get better jobs. You get to see people's family come together. You get to see them live through things you think they could never survive. Infidelity, you know, lost jobs, lost family members, all that sort of stuff. And you get to watch them weave that all back and watch, you know, God work through the steps and those people and see it transform their lives. And it's like, where else are you going to, in your life, get the privilege of being witness to that and being somebody who can support that and offer somebody whatever experience I have, you know, that can help? And just based on what we've done here in AA, I mean, now that is cool, right? That'll keep me coming around for another 21 years, I hope, and more, you know, because that is fun. And then you get, like I said, you get to watch those guys go out and have that experience with somebody else. And then they start talking about the transformations they've seen. And the other thing about sponsoring and being around AA is that, you know, I'm just as shallow as I ever was, so if it weren't fun, I wouldn't be here, right? And having a group of guys hanging around is really part of the fun. We, you know, the book talks about having a fellowship grow up around you, right? The fellowship that you seek. And I've had that happen in my life. Just a couple weeks ago, I had all the guys that I sponsor and all the guys they sponsor and all the guys they sponsor over for a backyard barbecue at my house. And you got 30-some guys running around back there, you know, and it's delightful to see somebody bring the new guy, the guy who's just there for the first time, terrified out of his mind. But, you know, to be friendly and just, like, have people realize there's a lot going on in AA and that these are the guys you could trust your life with, right? These are the guys. But we're just hanging out and having a backyard barbecue. We do other things together, though. We show up at the meetings, you know. And then these guys start to learn what it means to be part of a fellowship. There's something bigger than just them going on. They're not alone in this deal. But we also talk about the whole package deal. So we got those guys, you know, we're trying to get them to go to meetings. And we're trying to push them pretty quickly to realize that going to meetings isn't about going to hear some great nugget that somebody says that's going to make your life better. Going to meetings, and the real purpose of the meetings, like Brenda said, is to find somebody who's new. Somebody who doesn't have this thing figured out yet, who's not in the middle, and invite them in. So the task that I always give the guys I sponsor and the task I hope I, you know, demonstrate in my own life is that the real reason for me to be at a meeting is to make that particular meeting the friendliest place on earth for the alcoholic who's coming in that night. So, and what's fun is I love doing that. No, it doesn't have to be my home group. So if I show up at your home group, you're going to be wondering, who is that guy that's over there, like, greeting everybody and talking to everybody? It's like, somewhere along the line, I swear to God, I switched from being an introvert to an extrovert where nobody would ever believe I was, you know, shy and afraid at one point. Because I just love shaking hands with everybody in the room, finding out where people are. It's a little daunting around here, I'll tell you that. You know, it's a 65,000. I might be a few thousand off so far, but I'm trying to get there. You know, being friendly to folks and inviting them in. Because that really turns out to be where I have picked up most of the guys that I sponsor. Not from some great pearl I said at the podium, not some, you know, from corner in the corner of the room and demanding, hey, you got a sponsor, but from being friendly week to week, being the guy that they see week to week, the guy that they know they can talk to. All of a sudden, this place feels comfortable, and they're willing to spend some time with us, and they might ask at that point if I'd be willing to sponsor them, once they even figure out that that's a possibility. And that seems to work out really well. So the flip side of all this is that I have always been sponsored now since I stumbled into that group as well. And that's the last thing I want to talk about, is just that being sponsored is a huge part of this whole idea of working intensively with another alcoholic. Is that somewhere along the line, I learned some respect for a sponsor in my life and the value of having one. And really, just, he's the guy I surrender my life to. Because though I know that I really, he's not my higher power, but I don't know where else I'm going to hear anything that I think is a spiritual direction, because I don't trust anything that comes through here naturally, all right? So that relationship has been very important to me, and I, my sponsor is coming up on 50 years sober, God willing. And it's really from him that I've learned this, what I consider to be gentlemanly AA, where it is that friendliness, where it's, if it's not polite, it's not AA, where it's that we're all about who's the new guy in the room. Yes, I have buddies in AA that I want to hang out with, and I love seeing them at our meetings, but my first and my primary purpose needs to be for making this place a useful place for the new people who come in. And those are great, you know, lessons I've learned from him, and I will be, you know, forever grateful for that. So that is what I have to say. This is a fantastic topic for me because I feel like this is what I've learned AA is all about. And like I said, it's a privilege to be a part of anything in AA and certainly the international. I went to my first one at a year and a half sober just after joining that active group down in San Diego. And I tell you what, I'm not missing the world's largest party ever. So good to be here. Thank you.
All right. Well done. Two great speakers so far. Let's give them another round of applause. Woo! One of the other ways that I've really learned a lot about intensive work with other alcoholics is through service work, not just the one-on-one through the steps, but through the traditions and the concepts. And how did I learn that? Well, in service in this great program that saved my life, in general service, working at the area, the district, and I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of unbelievable people, many of them in this room and some of the best friends that I've ever had in my life. And our next speaker is one of those, which is Steve O. from Longport, New Jersey. His home group is South Philadelphia Group, and I'm just curious, is that, you know, the New Jersey part, is that northern New Jersey or southern New Jersey, right? Now, here's what I know about Steve, and I know he has some people here, so I know that Steve can get up here and do a good talk, but because I've heard him sell ice to Eskimos, right? Isn't that his full-time job?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
Steve.
And I want to thank the entire General Service Office staff and the whole General Service Board for all the hard work that went on for at least the past couple of years to make this event possible so that we can come and join in the language of the heart and the fellowship of the spirit.
Yeah.
I want to thank the two previous speakers and Linda for chairing this meeting that I can be a part of. When AA found me, I was strapped to a bed in a psychiatric hospital with delusions. I thought I was Jesus. Don't laugh, because if you're going to be delusional, you know, you might as well be Jesus, you know. So we're running around acting crazy in this psychiatric hospital. But at the time, my bad fortune was two other guys thought they were Jesus at the same time. So we didn't have a problem. The staff had a problem. So a guy and I commenced to beat the one guy up. And then the other guy, who was a roofer, kicked the crap out of me. And he said, "I'm Jesus, and you could be Peter, and you could be Paul." And we walked out of this little room. They locked us in a room. They said, you could kill each other, but this has got to stop. And we walked out of there like the Mod Squad, you know? Like, we demanded, like, meetings with the board administrator. And we wanted to change everything, you know? Much like when I came to AA. And I come a long way from those days in the psychiatric hospital. Not very far, but a little far. Homeless, high school dropout, on public assistance. I came from a nice middle-class family. And I saw the program, and being third, I counted on the fact that one of the panelists would be very well prepared with lots of notes and speak about the chapter that we've all read many, many times, working with others. And it says in there, which I'm sure you all know, being of help is our primary aim. It works when many other things fail. And I just want to tell you, I think from a personal level, like some personal anecdotes about my relationship with intensive work with other alcoholics to achieve the goal and the realization of freedom from the bondage of self and the freedom from the bondage of alcoholism through the practice and teachings of the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. Because there's been people in my life that have saved my life and have touched me forever. And I want to tell you about a few of them. Without crying like a baby.
So for those people that are like my spotters that were going to tell me when to stop, I can't see you because the lights are in my eyes. So
you
can forget about that. And it's better to ask forgiveness than permission, so I'll just keep going, you know, whatever. But my cousin's here in the first row, right? And his father took me to my first AA meeting. He's not alcoholic, but my parents were his godparents or something like that. And my mother was complaining to his mother, and he took me to my very first AA meeting after my mom and dad had gone to open AA meetings and Al-Anon meetings while I was locked up in the crazy coop. And some years later, I slept in his car when I had nowhere else to go. And this kid here was a baby, little infant. And he said, I can't let you in my house because I have a little baby. And my wife probably at the time wouldn't allow it because you're unpredictable and out of control. This fella here turns about 14 or 15, has 14, 15-year-old problems. My cousin calls on me, so I have to go and talk to him about alcoholism. I got an obligation and a sense of responsibility, but I was scared of my cousin, too. Because he's not a member of AA, so he has a different type of lifestyle, which is a Philadelphia lifestyle. Which, you know, they say, your mother cries every day about your drinking. If something happens to you, she'll cry for 2 weeks and then she'll get over it. Visit the grave once a year, put some flowers down. You better get yourself right. And I thought, how dare somebody speak to me like this, you know? So my cousin's probably over 30 or something like that by now. And I talked to him when he was 14, 15 years old in his home. And that was intensive work with other alcoholics, trying to carry the message to the person that took me to my first meeting, my family. And now he's sober 3 or 4 years, speaking on the circuit, going all around the world, traveling, speaking, carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I like to think that I was a small part of helping him understand the joy and the beauty of sobriety and what sobriety could be like being young and getting your life together. My sobriety date's April the 1st, 1987. Thanks. My parents thank you. The whole community of South Philadelphia thanks you. When they round up the usual suspects, you know, I'm not any longer thought of to be in the lineup of the 3 or 4 people. And I was at one time because I was doing stupid stuff, because I was drunk. And when I'm drunk, my thinking isn't good on a normal day, right, for those that know me. So when I'm drunk, all bets are off, and I just do stupid stuff. So when AA found me, they sent me to AA. And my mom and dad had set up people for me to meet. There was no young people really at that group. And they found a guy named Al. He was about 5 or 6 years older. And my parents were great enablers, and this was one other instance. And Al was just like me. Lazy, critical, judgmental, not particularly convinced that one drink was too many and 1,000's never enough. That for me, once you're pickled, you can't go back to being a cucumber. For me, to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth is probably the best help in the beginning. And we had made a lot of meetings together, Al and I. And we came just about when it was time to start. And before you said amen, just about, the echo of the amen in the room coincided with the slam of the door as we were on our way out. I never told you how I felt because I was never used to talking about my feelings or my issues. And after about a year and a couple months, Al and I, we were at a meeting. I made a meeting every day, the martyr that I am, because I knew you needed to have intensive work with other alcoholics, and I was going to help you realize your 12-step mission. So we got a bright idea that we were just so young, hip, and cool, you know, because we had never lost a wife and lost a house because we couldn't find a woman to stay with us long enough to get married, and we couldn't afford a house. And so we said, let's go get drunk. And we got drunk and we stayed drunk. And Al's dead today. And I found AA 6 months later, strapped to that same bed in that same facility, but much worse off in the mind. And the doctor said to me, he said, Steve, he said, the first time you came here, you were under this condition and this condition. This time you're a little worse off. The brain only comes back a certain time. If you're lucky enough to make it back here again, or a place like this, I can't guarantee that your mind will bounce back. I highly encourage you to follow the suggestions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was lucky enough to run into people that knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill R., Charlie D., Nancy S., in the South Philadelphia group. Never had an opportunity to do the things that I've had the opportunity to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and were 10 times the service workers that I'll ever be. And they saved my life. But if anybody hasn't had this happen to them, where a sponsor asks you, are you willing to go to any length? It's a set up, there's no good answer. There's really no good answer. So being a con that I am, I went for like the greater like odds, and I said, oh, absolutely. He said, good, you'll be speaking in Canada in May. And I said, oh, no. I don't do Canada. I can't get out of my zip code, and I'm not going to Canada. He said, oh, yes, you will. And I met my great friends from Canada, and I went to Manitoulin Island for a rainbow roundup for 20-some years. And that was my first opportunity to expand my sobriety, beyond my little local group. So I'm talking to these nice Canadian friends of mine, and they said, Steve, did you see the room that you're speaking in? I said, no, but people are texting me, telling me it's a big room. And these are kids like I sponsor, I know them and everything. And I thought they're teasing me, you know. They said, no, they wouldn't dare put me in a big room like that. It's probably like a little closet, you know, 34, like a home group thing. So Thursday night, I said, I better find this room, you know. So I come around the hall there, and I said, holy crap, it's a big room. And then quick, my mind went just like that, said, you know, I'm not worthy of the dome. You know, what am I, chopped liver here? AA's given me a lot of confidence, and it's given me a lot of an ability to do just like that, laugh at myself. So my Canadian friends were having dinner. They stole the check from me again. They said, Steve, do you know why the room is that big? I said, oh, because all the people are going to come, you know, whatever. They said, no, to get your ego through the door. In a dry Canadian wit, eh? I mention Al every time I speak, no matter where it is. I fit Al into my story, because Al's me. I'm fighting against the person that Al and I were when I first came to AA in 1985, and I hadn't stayed sober since. And I mentioned Al at my home group, and the kid's head spun around. And after the meeting, he said, how did you know Al? I said, oh, Al and I were good buddies. We made meetings together every day for over a year. He said, that's my brother. There were things he didn't know even about his brother. I didn't tell him the whole story, too. Here, tomorrow, that fella at Matt's want to celebrate 15 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it talks about it in this chapter, too, is that, the intensive work with others that I think that I'm given, on many occasions, they're helping me more than I think, or even the fact that I'm helping them. And there's a lot of people that's the case. And we had a young people's meeting at midnight in our hospitality room. There were 50 people in there representing all the various young people's committees, the 7, 8, or 10 young people's committees in Pennsylvania. And the intensive work to help with the planning committees and to help with the encouragement and to help get rooms and pay for facilities through general service efforts so that they can have the privilege to do intensive work with other alcoholics is part of the intensive work that I try to do to make it possible for alcoholics to carry the message to the young people in Alcoholics Anonymous or wherever it may be in Alcoholics Anonymous, jails, treatment centers, through public information and cooperation with the professional community. My friend Charlie got sober in 1956, and I made a lot of meetings, and you know what, you had this experience probably, you know, I could hear his talk in my head, because he always said the same thing all the time. And he taught me, stinking thinking leads to drinking. You have to get your mind situated. And it talks in this chapter about the alcoholic mind. And if I can get my condition situated that I can go anywhere and do anything, and I've been able to do a lot of those things in my sobriety, I never would have thought that I could have had a wife for 25 years, that I could have driven a car. I couldn't drive a car because I was afraid that I would kill myself, not kill you. I figured if I killed myself, I couldn't drink somehow. And then if I killed you, I would go to jail, but I would get liquor in jail. You know what I mean? Alcoholism took everything before I even had a lot of it. And I have had the privilege to do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous and go a lot of places and have a lot of experiences. And the ripple effect of one person, and I think we heard it from all three speakers last night. We heard it from Stephanie, we heard it from Michael, and we heard it from Roy. Each one of them in their stories mentioned a singular event or a singular person that had an overwhelming impact and were the inspirational forces that took them from one place of thinking to another realization of salvation from alcoholism. And I think back, and you all probably have had those own experiences, I always reflect sometimes and I think about Charlie D. and Bill R. My sponsor's here, he's probably 85, and he's got a cane, and he goes faster than I go. I can't keep up with him. And he teaches me about slowing down, patience. Before the meeting, they said, you have to talk slow. And I figure where I come from, when you get 3 minutes, you make the most of it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because they will gong you, you know? So I learned early on to just hit the ground running. You know what I mean? So I hope I was able to speak clearly and slowly enough so that the people that needed that assistance, that I wasn't so selfish, that I was only thinking about myself, that I would think about somebody else. And the more that I'm able to get out of myself, as was mentioned, and the more that I can think of others, and usually the closer I get to the time where my wife makes a decision, the closer I come to that realization, the better off I am. And the problem I have is the realization when my wife makes a decision sometimes takes days, weeks, and months. And all that heartache and aggravation that I put myself through is totally unnecessary. If I just said, yes, dear, that's a good idea, and I think we should do exactly that. And I haven't always been so great at that, you know. So just to sum up, the feeling that I get through being in the dome and meeting everybody through the hallways is that that they talk about in the book, that, you know, we have this common bond like nobody. Like my brother, who loves me, doesn't love me like you love me. He loves me because he kind of has to, or I'll kick his butt, or I won't give his kids good gifts. But you love me because your life depends on it, and so does mine. And sometimes you'll tell me things that I need to hear, that I have to hear. And sometimes it causes me to do action that I have to do, hard things that I don't want to do, that you know that'll save my life. And I'll give you a quick example. I don't know, about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, I get a call from my father, who's now in an Alzheimer's unit and doesn't even know my name. The guy who used to deliver me food when I slept in the park. And now I have to take care of his bills and make sure he's okay. He calls me, he says, your brother's on the news, he's going to jail, he killed somebody. And this is a kid that I had made amends to, and it was never right after that. You know when you hear all the stories about, oh, I made amends and everything? Most of the time in my life that's the case, except this one time, my older brother. And I said to my father, I said, good, that's what he deserves for being mean to me. He didn't accept my amends. I'm living a different life. I'm sober. I said I was sorry, and he's never talked to me since. So my wife is there at 7 o'clock in the morning. He's on the news, and she informs me that that was not the correct thinking, you know? I felt very vindicated that God had done for me what I couldn't do for myself, was give my brother the proper punishment that he deserved. And my wife leans over to me and she says, you know what you're going to do? I said, nah, I don't know what you think I'm going to do, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm gloating, you know. She said, you're going to pay his bills. You're going to send his kids to that same school that they're going to. And you're going to make sure that they have everything that they need to stay in that house. And I thought she had lost her mind. I thought this was a woman that did not know me. And of course, you know, what I just had told you, like the realization to what that decision would be, was the right. It didn't take me 2 minutes. It took me maybe 2 weeks. And that's what I did. I made sure that they stayed in the home and everything like that. He got out in a couple years. He didn't send me a thank you. He didn't send me a postcard. But God had done for me what I couldn't do for myself. My final resentment in my life against my brother that I would have never gotten over with the help of the whole dome of Alcoholics Anonymous couldn't help me get over that. Only God could help me get over that. And my assistant higher power, too. God was speaking to me, but I kind of wasn't listening, you know. And that old-timer said, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth, so you know what's more important. It took me a while to figure that one out, too, you know. I'm a little slow, as you figured out, you know. I'm the guy that robs a house, and the phone rings, and I pick it up and say hello. The true story. And I want to write the message for the guy, you know. Vince called. Well, he's like the whole house is ransacked, and I took everything that he worked hard for, that he owned. You know, that's the kind of guy I am under the influence of alcohol. And I think that for those people that know me, that know what kind of guy I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, can say, yeah, Steve's a little crazy, but he's a good AA man. And that's all I ever wanted to be, was a good AA man. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.